It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
It's the Media Buzz Meter with Howard Kurtz.
Barry McCaffrey was a 4-star general, and he's been an MSNBC contributor for years. Well, the other day, he tweeted about, and he had an image of a Russian plane being shot down. And here's what he said: Russian aircraft getting nailed by Ukraine missile defense. Russians are losing large numbers of attack aircraft. Ukraine defense becoming formidable. The only problem was it wasn't actually war footage. It was a screenshot from a video game. I guess we could call that a misfire. The video game, for those of you who play such games, is called Arma 3. So McCaffrey deleted the tweet. I'm tempted to say I hope he ran his wars better than he runs his Twitter account, but I don't know how you could confuse a video game with actual war footage. Anyway, Eric Clapton, I've talked about him. Yeah, I'm a huge fan of Clapton's guitar playing. But he, for the last couple of years, or since the pandemic began, has been in an odd place. In fact, last summer he said he wouldn't perform any shows at any venue where people in the audience were required to show proof of COVID vaccination. And he just said, this is discrimination against the audience at a time when, obviously, a lot of public health authorities, politicians, and others were trying to convince people to be vaccinated. Well, Eric Clapton has just tested positive for COVID after the second of two concerts at the Royal Albert Hall. Quote, he's been told by his medical advisors that if he were to resume traveling and performing too soon, it could substantially delay his full recovery. Eric is also anxious to avoid passing on any infection to any of his band, crew, promoters, their staff, and, of course, the fans. So, look, I don't take any pleasure in this. As I say, I like Clapton. But he just went into a strange headspace over vaccinations. I mean, if a local arena chose to say you've got to show proof of vaccination, why would he not do that? But, you know, obviously we're in a bit of a surge right now. Clapton, you know, there's no shame in getting it. I don't take any pleasure in reporting this. And by the way, we just broke the 100,000 mark for new daily cases. That's more than a tripling in just the last few weeks. All right, lots to cover here today on the podcast. Number one, the tragic, heartbreaking Buffalo supermarket shooting. And President Biden and his wife Jill went to Buffalo yesterday. President gave a speech, which I thought was the most emotional of his presidency. He said a bunch of things. He said white supremacy is a poison. He said that hate and fear are being given too much oxygen by those who pretend to love America but who don't understand America. And Biden also saying this is work that requires all of us, presidents and politicians, commentators, citizens, none of us can stay on the sidelines. And of course, Biden, having suffered more than once loss in his own family, and he, by the way, he gave the speech after meeting with survivors of the Buffalo shooting and family members of the victims, talked about, you know, it may not seem the case now, but eventually, you know, this hole that you have in your heart will heal. And I speak from personal experience, you know, having lost his first wife and one of his children in a car accident, and then, of course, the death of Beau Biden more recently. And I thought it was very moving, a very moving speech. I thought he rose to the occasion. But nothing is going to change. Nothing's going to change because anything having to do with guns, although now the focus has shifted a bit to mental health, is just going to be blocked in Congress. And there's one politician, I forget who it is, who is pushing, maybe it's more than one, the idea of raising the minimum age to legally buy a gun from 18 to 21. Obviously, the Buffalo suspect bought the gun at the age of 18 perfectly legally, despite the fact that he had been taken into custody by police when he was in high school last year, subjected to a psychiatric evaluation, yet wasn't flagged for further attention under the red flag law. So there's some other developments on this, but I did want to start with, you know, that's what presidents should do. And look, Biden, you had to know if there's any subject on which he would be eloquent, it would be this. He spearheaded the Obama administration's efforts to get some kind of gun control, gun restrictions, came up empty. And Barack Obama gave very moving speeches, particularly I remember the one where he sang Amazing Grace after the Charleston church shooting. And yet nothing has changed. In fact, as I mentioned yesterday, the day after the Buffalo shooting was another shooting in California by an anti-Taiwanese alleged assailant who went after a Taiwanese church gathering. So new developments here on the suspect, whose name I will not use. About 30 minutes before he opened fire in that predominantly black Buffalo neighborhood in the supermarket, people just going about their business trying to get their groceries, killed because of the color of their skin and nothing more. He went on a chat room, and this is under the chat application Discord, and he allowed people, it was described as a small number of people, to see what he had been posting for months, numerous pictures of himself posing with his gear, the weapon he had bought, even sharing hand-drawn maps of the Tops grocery store where he carried out this heinous, racially motivated and anti-Semitic motivated attack. Now, none of the people he invited to review his writings appear to have alerted law enforcement. Now, I don't know the details here. I don't know if you'd have any legal liability if you knew that a terrorist attack, and that's what this was going to be carried out. Wouldn't you feel some obligation to notify the police, and perhaps these deaths could have been prevented? But whether they're criminally liable or not, and the story I'm looking at here in the New York Times says, you know, it would be a tough case to make that you were an accessory, just if you were in a chat room, that the moral failing of people who knew about this, even a half hour before. I mean, one call to the cops, and you got, you know, 10 officers standing outside the supermarket. Meanwhile, the U.S. Is in the middle of a great gun-buying boom. The number of firearms manufactured in this country annually has nearly tripled since 2000 and spiked again in just the last 3 years. And according to the first comprehensive tally of gun commerce that's been carried out in two decades. The police have also recovered 19,344 privately manufactured firearms, untraceable weapons known as ghost guns, in 2021, a tenfold increase since 2016. Law enforcement people say this has contributed to the surge in gun-related killings, which are not all mass shootings, obviously. It could just be gang shootings or the horrifying urban violence that seems to come every weekend, particularly in the warmer weather in many of our major cities. In California, about half of the guns recovered in gun-related killings at crime scenes are ghost guns. So, and this is circles back to my point about, yeah, but nothing's going to change. Didn't change after Columbine, it didn't change after Sandy Hook, it didn't change after Las Vegas, it didn't change after Orlando, it didn't change after many, 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 many other mass shootings. And here's Dick Durbin, part of the Senate Democratic leadership, saying we're kind of stuck where we are. He is playing down the chance for even a modest bill to strengthen background checks for gun purchases could overcome Republican efforts to block it. Senator Chris Murphy of Connecticut, Democratic senator who has made this a major issue because Sandy Hook happened in his state, says that he thinks the Democrats should make a major issue, a rallying cry about this in the midterms. He says, I worry that a lot of my colleagues still believe in the mythology of 1994, when everyone thought Democrats lost Congress over the assault weapon ban. That's not true. Actually, I think it is kind of true. I mean, it's not the only reason Democrats lost. The first 2 years of Clinton administration were not a classing, not a smashing success. But ever since then, you know, the assault weapon ban was allowed to lapse, and nobody wants to take on the challenge. And by the way, this goes well beyond guns because, again, if most of the mass shootings that have occurred in this country, and this one in Buffalo was the worst of this year, involved legally purchased guns, then you can't say that changing the gun laws make much difference. What you have to do is keep guns out of the hands of mentally ill people, which here's my definition. You walk into any crowded place and start firing. That takes a sick and twisted mind. Hey, let's pause right there. The buzz meter continues right after this.
Fox News Radio on demand on the Fox News app. Download the app and just click listen. When you swipe left, you can listen to your favorite Fox News talk shows live. Swipe right for the latest Fox News Radio newscasts on demand. Fox News Radio on the Fox News app. Download it today.
Let's move on to number two. A lot of primaries yesterday and a lot of attention in Pennsylvania. So right now, as I speak, and it's going to be this way for at least a couple of days, too close to call in that Republican primary for the Senate from Pennsylvania. There is Dr. Oz, Mehmet Oz, who has about a 2,500 vote lead over a hedge fund CEO, David McCormick. And if Oz ends up winning, Trump backed him, and Trump can claim credit for that. But, you know, there was all this attention on Kathy Barnett, who actually ended up, you know, being numerous percentage points down. And what happened is Trump said she would never be able to win a general election. She got hammered by the media once she became a serious threat. And she had actually ticked ahead in at least one tracking poll that I saw. But she couldn't answer a lot of basic questions about past tweets that were anti-Islam, anti-gay. She once called Barack Obama a Muslim, a whole bunch of stuff, dispute over whether she actually was a professor at a certain university. She would say, oh, you're not providing the context. Well, what is the context? She had a particularly tough interview on Fox News Sunday. And I think the combination, this is a rare combination, of the GOP establishment and the mainstream media stopped her momentum. I don't think there's any question about it. Now, maybe she wouldn't have won anyway. But she had this, you know, rags to riches story, mother considered aborting her, and she was an attractive candidate, but she had all this baggage. So we don't know how the other two candidates will fare because it is so close. There may have to be an automatic recount. At the same time, on the Democratic side, Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman, who's gotten a lot of attention and support on the Democratic side, for describing himself as just a dude who goes around wearing a hoodie. And unfortunately, he suffered a minor stroke and wasn't able to go to his victory rally in person. Also losing, and, you know, I didn't think there was any question about this, Madison Cawthorn conceding his race in North Carolina. Anybody, even though, you know, this guy made so many mistakes that Trump, who had endorsed him early on, had to send out a note saying, look, he's made some foolish mistakes, but let's give him a second chance. When your chief endorser has to put it that way, you got some problems. He didn't give a concession speech, which I didn't think was very classy. But this is a guy who, of course, told the lie about being invited to do cocaine by other members of Congress, being invited to orgies by other members of Congress. He got a little scolding from Kevin McCarthy on that. Twice stopped, I believe it's twice, for driving without a license. Twice stopped trying to get a gun through airport security. Then there were all those pictures that came out before he was in politics, sometimes in various state of undress. And it just was one thing after another after another. Now, if you don't lose after that, even though it's a Trumpy district, I don't know what it would take. So you got a kind of a mixed bag here in the Pennsylvania governor's race. It looks like the Republican Mastriano will win, and he's somebody who Donald Trump endorsed only this past Saturday. So what he's trying to do is, look, Mastriano said, I was going to win anyway, but it's nice to have Trump's endorsement. What Trump is trying to do is to get his winning percentage up. Because then if you look at other states, there are some of his people who won. There are some of his people who lost. And it's going to be a mixed bag. It's going to be a mixed bag. Speaking of Trump news, The Guardian has a piece telling us all that Donald Trump says he's writing a book that will depress readers. What it is about, what he calls the big lie, election fraud caused by his defeat by Joe Biden. So just the other day in Texas, this is the greatest hoax, heist, one of the greatest crimes in the history of our country. So the name of the book is The Crime of the Century. Trump says, I don't think you'll enjoy it. You'll be very depressed when you read it. But we want to have it down for historic reasons. Now, it's being put out by a company called Winning Team Publishing, an imprint co-founded by Donald Trump Jr. So that explains a little bit about how this is happening. And he put out a new book alert, Crime of the Century. Trump claims to have turned down two book deals from the most unlikely of publishers because he didn't want a deal right now. I'm writing like crazy anyway. When the time comes, you'll see the book of all books. And what publishing insiders are saying, at least according to Politico, is that no mainstream publisher wanted to touch this book, regardless of what the former president said. One insider quoted as saying, it would be too hard to get a book that was factually accurate. That would be the problem. If he can't even admit that he lost the election, how do you publish that? Keith Urban, an agent who's done a lot of big-time deals, telling Politico, it doesn't matter what the upside on a Trump book deal is. The headaches the project would bring would far outweigh the potential in the eyes of a major publisher. And there'd be a staff uprising and so forth. So I think that's why it's being published by an imprint, I guess co-founded by Don Jr. You know, you do have to ask the question. I mean, obviously Trump's not putting out this book to make money, but, you know, are there people who want Trump to run in 2024 but want to stop talking about 2020? Certainly there are a lot of Republicans in private who would like to move on, as they said after Bill Clinton's impeachment, the name of that group, from talking about widespread election fraud, which remains unproven to this day. And no book by Donald Trump is going to convince people who have a realistic view of it. But on the other hand, I saw a statistic somewhere that about a third of the Republicans who voted in the primaries yesterday, and that's not the entire Republican Party, because primaries tend to attract the most passionate and the greatest activists, believe in Trump's big lie theory by the fact that he's repeated again and again and again that Joe Biden is not the legitimately elected president. And some of the Republican candidates who won the primaries yesterday are not willing to say that Joe Biden is the duly elected president of the United States. Okay, story number three. You know, this is a process story that ain't that big a deal, but when it broke late yesterday afternoon, MSNBC went crazy. It got a lot of play on CNN as well. It was broken by the New York Times. You know, it's a funny thing. I was thinking about this coming out of newspapers. You know, it used to be you would, if you had a big scoop in the old days, the pre-Twitter days, you would hold it back until the morning papers so that others couldn't just kind of rip it off. Or you would publish it maybe 10:30 or 11 at night when there wouldn't be much time for anybody to play catch up and therefore would have to credit you. But now a lot of these things seem to come out in late afternoon to early evening. Now, why is that? It's because of the connection between cable news and newspapers, particularly the New York Times, to some extent the Washington Post. A number of their reporters are contributors at those two cable news networks, and it lines up for them. It tees up a whole night of appearances in which they can then, so tell us about what you found. And that makes it into a much bigger story. Anyway, here's the story broken by the Times. Justice Department has asked the House committee investigating January 6 for transcripts of interviews it is conducting behind closed doors, including some with associates of Trump, according to people with knowledge of the situation. So is that significant? Yeah, I'm not saying it shouldn't be reported. It shows you that the criminal probe being overseen by Merrick Garland is taken seriously enough within the department that they want to see and maybe avoid duplicating some of the interviews that have already been done, or, you know, depositions, in effect, by certain Republican members of Congress, Trump associates, other people involved, and so forth. So the committee has interviewed more than 1,000 people, and as the Times story puts it, the transcripts could be used by the Justice Department as evidence in potential criminal cases to pursue new leads or as a baseline for new interviews conducted by federal law enforcement officials. Now, the committee hasn't agreed to do this. You say, why? This is what they want. They want a DOJ probe. Well, the chairman of the panel, Benny Thompson, says they've got to work it out. They've got to negotiate it. Maybe they want something in return, which is information that the DOJ has dug up. According to the actual letter of request, they want the panel to provide us transcripts of these interviews and of any additional interviews that you conduct in the future, because these may contain information relevant to a criminal investigation we are conducting. Look, if the Department of Justice didn't ask for this, it would mean the investigation was going nowhere. So it is a sign of seriousness. At the same time, the reason that so much of this is getting this kind of play is simple. A lot of people in the media are rooting for some kind of criminal case against Donald Trump. They're rooting for it. They don't know what the evidence is. They haven't seen the depositions except the ones that have been made public. And they want the committee to turn this over. They want justice to act. They're ticked off at Merrick Garland. He should have indicted Trump, you know, a long time ago. Well, that's not the way the justice system works, and it's not the way it should work. Hey, let's pause right there. The buzz meter continues right after this. Story number four. My column today on Fox is, I'll give away the joke. I started off by saying President Biden is feuding with one of the world's richest men, owner of a space rocket company, in a fight playing out on Twitter. No, not Elon Musk. It's Jeff Bezos, who is sniping at President Biden over inflation and corporate taxes and accusing the White House of misdirection. This is interesting because Jeff Bezos has never been a big tweeter. He's got about 4 million followers on Twitter. Elon has 90 million followers, and Elon is just, you know, whether he should be sending poop emojis or not, he's funny, he's outrageous, he's sometimes juvenile, he's erratic, he's impulsive, you know all the adjectives. But Bezos wants to get into the game. I think there's a little bit of billionaire jealousy going on here. But Bezos's tweets are much more earnest. So after Biden tweeted that it would help in the fight against inflation if we could raise taxes on corporations and the wealthy, that's when Bezos said misdirection. But the fact is, even though that particular Biden tweet did not mention Bezos or Amazon, the president has been whacking Amazon. It's a fight that he wants because he often points to Amazon as a company that's paid very little in federal taxes. And he often points to Jeff Bezos, or his allies do, as a guy who, according to ProPublica, and based on IRS records, there were at least 2 years, 2007 and 2011, where Bezos paid no federal income taxes personally, perfectly legally, which, of course, is the problem. So the White House hit back at Bezos, saying it doesn't require a huge leap to figure out why one of the wealthiest individuals on Earth opposes an economic agenda for the middle class. It cuts some of the biggest costs families face, fights inflation, and on and on. And so the spokesman for the White House, Andrew Bates, added, he's the deputy press secretary, it's also unsurprising this tweet comes after the president met with labor organizers, including Amazon employees. Bezos back to Twitter. Look, a squirrel. They understandably want to muddy the topic. They know inflation hurts the neediest the most, but unions aren't causing inflation, and neither are wealthy people. But a strong case can be made that really wealthy people, I mean super zillionaires like Bezos, are using, you know, all the legal loopholes and accountants and everything to pay a far lower tax rate. I think it was about 5%, according to one study, than, you know, Bezos' secretary or Warren Buffett's secretary, you name it. Remember, says Bezos, the administration tried their best to add another $3.5 trillion to federal spending. they failed, thanks to Joe Manchin, he says. If they succeeded, inflation would be even higher than it is today. Inflation today is at a 40-year high. So I think Bezos wants to mix it up a bit. I think he's ticked off at Biden in the White House. I think he's kind of saying, oh, this Twitter thing, you know, maybe I should get in on this. And I think this is a fight the White House would love to have because I don't think Amazon is that popular these days. All right, story number five. I have to admit, how long has this Johnny Depp Amber Heard trial been going on? And the reason it's getting so much attention, besides the fact that you have this complete and total meltdown between these two former, I guess I would say, Hollywood stars, is because the trial is televised. Everybody can watch it or watch the clips every day. And I've just sort of, I keep an eye on the stories. I've just sort of given up. There's nobody to root for. They both look awful. They are destroying each other and themselves. Remember, it's Johnny Depp who filed this lawsuit because Amber Heard had described herself as a victim of domestic abuse in a Washington Post op-ed, but hadn't named Depp. But at the same time, everybody knew who she was talking about. And so the latest bit of news here is that Amber Heard, under examination yesterday, admitted that she lied. I mean, it seems to me they've both admitted to a whole bunch of lies. She had said that when she got a $7 million divorce settlement from Depp, she pledged publicly to give half of it, $3.5 million, to the ACLU. On the witness stand, however, she said, well, it was the lawsuit by my ex-husband that kept me from donating money from that settlement. However, Amber Heard has claimed several times, including under oath in Depp's 2020 libel case in the UK, that she had donated the entire settlement to charity. So she lied about that. She didn't donate a dime. And I've seen some legal experts say she could face perjury charges because of saying this under oath in a British court. Now, The Atlantic has a piece, and just in terms of the physical abuse and the poop in the bed, and who hit who and who hit who first, it is just an absolute friggin' mess. Now, The Atlantic has a piece saying that, at least in a PR sense, not necessarily legally, Johnny Depp is kicking butt in this televised trial. And Amber Heard is really unpopular on the interwebs. Depp supporters have gone on TikTok. They've gone on Tumblr to circulate a totally debunked claim that Heard plagiarized part of her opening statement from a movie, The Talented Mr. Ripley, or the book, I don't know. And the author writes on Twitter, I was personally surprised to see that even many of the Harry Styles fans I follow are, for whatever reason, adamantly anti-Amber. Makes me sick listening to Amber Heard, one wrote. Literally, Amber Heard is the plague, wrote another. I guess this is why, they must have a point, because I guess this is why, as the trial was dragging on, Amber Heard fired her PR team, and I guess hired some new publicists, because she's just taking a beating. Now, I just look at it as, wow, I mean, both of them have lied. Both of them have apparently engaged in physical violence. It's just like your worst nightmare come true. And none of this had to happen. Depp didn't have to sue and bring all this back. If he hadn't filed this suit several years ago, maybe they both could have tried to move on to their lives. So the people who are doing the online slams against Amber are known as the Deptford Wives, which I think is pretty clever. They are subjecting Amber Heard, according to this Atlantic piece, to body shaming, wild criminal accusations, skewering her with sexist tropes. They're ambitious but also stupid, says the magazine. They are glamorous and seductive but also secretly disgusting. Victoria Hervey, small-time British model with about 300,000 Instagram followers, writes that Heard sounds like she would be more at home in a psych ward, and referred in an recent Instagram story to girls like these that constantly make things up. So many are sick of these fake Me Too movement victims who are ruining it for the real victims of domestic abuse, she tells The Atlantic. And there's even, I mean, this is the level that you get down to when something is televised. There's a moment when Amber Heard, I guess, took out a tissue to wipe her face, wipe away some tears. And one of her critics claimed that she paused for a second so that photographers would have ample time to get a shot of her wiping away tears. The theory is that Heard's Kleenex was a false flag. Well, wow. I mean, who among us would want every single motion, every word, every dabbing away of tears dissected and to get all this abuse? And maybe the explanation is pretty simple. Women always get it worse on places like Twitter, but also on places like Instagram, because, you know, people can pull out the misogynistic language, you're ugly, the sexual threats, the sexual innuendo, and maybe it's as simple as that. My position is a little more nuanced. I think they both look like horrible human beings, but that's apparently not the way it's playing out online. All right, I've stayed away from doing this every day because ultimately who cares? You know, first world problems, but it is just a classic rise and fall for both of them. Hey, appreciate having you along for the ride here. I'll just take this brief moment to say that Apple iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or on your Amazon device are very good places to get the BuzzMeter podcast. We'll see you tomorrow with more BuzzMeter.
This is Jimmy Failla, inviting you to join me for Fox Across America, where we'll discuss every single one of the Democrats' dumb ideas. Just kidding. It's only a 3-hour show. Listen live at noon Eastern or get the podcast at foxacrossamerica.com.